Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to episode number 121 of the Necessary Roughness podcast, presented by Last Word on Sports. I'm your host, Nicholas Donatic. Hope you all are having a fantastic week. On top of that, I hope you guys are excited for Thanksgiving coming up soon. Big holiday. If my listeners, or if you guys are listening from America, I don't know, maybe around the world, you're big fans of football, and you somehow found your way into a small show like mine, and if that's the case, you know what, I appreciate you even more than the viewers that are here every week, even though, you know, my heart goes out to them too. So, we're doing the show early Saturday here, late Friday, whatever you want to call it, going through week 10 and then breaking down, week 10 and then breaking down and picking the week 11 matchups as we usually do. Speaking of as we usually do, we're going to start this week's episode with my standout seven. Standout seven, going to start with the bigger story. Number one, bigger win, Kansas City Chiefs or the Dallas Cowboys? Now you might say, Nick, these are two wins that we pretty much expected going in. Well, I'd say you're not exactly right there, because the Las Vegas Raiders were coming in at 5-3, the Chiefs coming in at 5-4. This game was in Vegas. This was a massive win for Kansas City, and this is something that, you know, pat yourself on the back, to myself at least, if you had this one coming, because I didn't have the Chiefs out of it. I kept picking the Chiefs, and I said once they get past these turnovers, if they do, they're just as deadly as they've always been, and I'd be willing to bet, I'm not going to pour through the, you know, statistics over and over and over again here, because we've got a whole show to go through, but I'd be willing to bet if you look at the points off of turnovers and then start to assess this Kansas City defense, you're going to realize this defense is a lot better than people are giving them credit for. You take a look in this game, no interceptions from Pat Mahomes, though you could make the argument there's at least one, you know, I believe it was Morig drops it off of a horrible decision to just chuck one up to Tyreek, and then I think there was another dropped interception as well. Meanwhile, on the other side, obviously Derek Carr turned the ball over once, and the Raiders were just unable completely to get the ball moving on the ground. 261 through the air for Carr on the ground, 50 yards total. Leading rusher was Derek Carr himself. Not a great game. You had the massive fumble by DeSean Jackson as well. Catches a deep ball, and then I don't know what was going on there. I think he might have got turned around. Winds up getting stripped. Kills the momentum there. Pretty big blow. But we'll spare you the play-by-play here. It's late in the day, as I said. You know, trying to make sure we pump the content out for you guys. If you are a fan of the show, thanks for sticking around. If it's first time here, welcome aboard. Welcome aboard. We're a little bit into it, you know, but new fans always welcome. This game showed when Kansas City can minimize the turnovers, they really can just tear you up. Travis Kelce, 119 yards, and the post-game, guess I got my swagger back. Hilarious. 101 receiving yards for the running back, Darrell Williams. Couple that with 43 yards on the ground. He had a massive game. He had a massive catch. It was a horrible decision, and it gave me a little bit of cause to pause. Horrible decision by Mahomes to chuck that ball up to Darrell Williams for a jump ball, but he came down with it. Two touchdowns for Tyreek Hill as well. This game was encouraging if you're a Chiefs fan, or if you're someone like me that has said Kansas City is still a threat in this conference. However, you have to keep in mind the dropped interception from Morig, the huge fumble from DeSean Jackson, the interception that could have been on that Hail Patty, you know, Hail Patty, late in the game, where it was like, the game's out of reach, we're just going to chuck it up. It shows that that's still in that offense. You know what I mean? You get enough tipped interceptions, eventually you wind up with some dropped ones, and that's why I think Patty wound up coming up clean on this one. A little bit of karma, a little bit of juju from the universe, if you will. Huge win for them. Before we even get into Dallas, and look, big win for Dallas, in my opinion, the answer has to be Kansas City. Because now, all of a sudden, Kansas City's right back in it. There's only one bye in each conference anyway. So it's like, all right, well, if we weren't going to be the one seed, who cares? Let's just try and win the division, get as high a seed as we can. And the thing is, in this AFC right now, with injuries hitting Tennessee the way they have, the best team in the AFC, in my opinion, it's still wide open. It really is. Let's talk about Dallas. So, it's a little weird to call this a big win after watching Atlanta get... We'll talk about what happened to them on Thursday Night Football. The thing is, going into this game, the Atlanta Falcons were coming in at 4-4. Yeah. And they were playing a Dallas Cowboys team that had just been, you know, kind of shocked on their home turf. So they had a chance to go in there and maybe keep up some of that momentum, I guess, against Dallas. Some negative momentum, if you will. Some poor play. That did not happen. They looked atrocious. And that's one of the reasons I really can't give this to Dallas either. This Atlanta team in the last 5 days, from Sunday to Thursday, has played two of the worst games I've ever seen the Atlanta Falcons play. I mean, Dak played well. Great. Zeke had 2 touchdowns. Good for CeeDee Lamb. Tony Pollard doing Tony Pollard things. Leading rusher and 56 yards receiving. I mean, come on. Josh Rosen winds up in this game. He goes 1 for 6 with an interception. If I remember correctly, Rosen also wound up in the game against the Patriots. Yeah, and he threw a pick in that game. Goodness gracious, man. You are pacing at a Jameis Winston level of interceptions for a guy that never touches the field. I am thoroughly impressed by that. Either way, good win for Dallas. They're in a division that they will run away with. They're in a conference that is wide open, due at least in part to the Kyler Murray, DeAndre Hopkins injuries, coupled with the injuries going on in Tampa, spread it around, you know. A good win for the Dallas Cowboys, but I wouldn't say that it trumps the Chiefs getting back into it. Number 2, bigger loss, the Cleveland Browns or the LA Chargers? Well, you know we're a fan on this show of saying context matters. The Cleveland Browns went up to Foxborough to play this game. The LA Chargers, on the other hand, were at home against the Minnesota Vikings team that is equal parts great and awful with the ways that they find to give games away. I'm very disappointed in what I saw from both squads. Baker Mayfield gets nicked up, but that doesn't excuse the fact that the New England Patriots hung 45 on you. That is atrocious. We'll talk Patriots in a little while, but that was awful. Back to the West Coast side of things. Justin Herbert, 27-20 is not the end of the world for a score. I still, like I said, beginning of the year, I had them contending for a wild card, but I thought it would be outside, you know, just on the outside looking in, which is looking more and more accurate. But at the beginning of the year, you had a team that just beat Kansas City in Kansas City. Like, you do that, okay, you're ready to rock and roll. Here we are, though, not ready, not rocking and rolling. And some of that is, you know, I mean, Mike Williams only winds up with 4 catches for 33 yards in this one. Not putting it all on Mike. Some of it's strategy, some of it's the coverage from Minnesota. But I will say, when Mike Williams was popping off and, you know, living to the top of his potential, going into that next echelon of talent at wide receiver, I'm talking Mike Evans-ish, you know, big body wide receiver that can contribute, that can be relied upon. This team looked completely different. Production at the tight end position in the post-Hunter Henry era has not been great. I don't think Jared Cook has really filled in great. It is what it is. You can't change letting him go. Gets a big deal from New England. Has he been phenomenal for New England? Meh. He's been good in spurts. You know, he's a contributor. So who walks away with the bigger loss? Both teams are in crowded divisions, but I think we're going to combo it. We do this all the time when we pick games. We pick off our own momentum. I think we're going to combo this and say that the Chargers had the bigger loss because they've squandered so much momentum that they had from the beginning of the year. They've squandered an opportunity to really, you know, heap some dirt on the grave. If you're pulling away from a team that you know is like, ah, you know, it's, oh, the Chiefs are having an off year. They're having an off year. Then build a lead. build a huge lead. We saw it in baseball, and this is not a one-to-one comparison. The Boston Red Sox were running away a little bit in the AL East. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, they wind up fighting to even get into the wild card because you didn't put enough dirt on the graves of the Tampa Bay Rays. You want to throw the Yankees and the Blue Jays in there? Sure, whatever. For my own edification, you know, because I'm a New Yorker, I'll let you do it. But realistically, you got to run away when you got a chance, and they've been unable to do that. And I think especially losing at home gives you a little bit more. Losing to Belichick in Foxborough, it is what it is. Getting blown out, awful look, but I'll give the bigger L to the Chargers. Next one's a little confusing, I'm not going to lie to you. Bigger L, we're keeping it negative this week because we had a rough pick'em week. Bigger L, Tampa Bay losing to their kryptonite, the Washington Footballers, or Arizona losing with a backup QB, and essentially keeping this door open for the bye in the NFC. And then we've got a bonus one to throw in there, the LA Rams. We're going to talk about all the primetime games, but we got to throw them in there for consideration as well. Tough loss to San Francisco. Let's start first things first. Tom Brady on the road against the new anti-Brady Taylor Heineke. It is what it is. 26-32, 256 for Heineke. Nothing that'll knock your socks off. Solid completion percentage. Antonio Gibson runs for 2 touchdowns. Scary Terry had a couple of big grabs. It really wasn't much. Tom turns the ball over twice in this one. They lose by 10. Certainly helped contribute to it. They just laid an egg. Point blank. We've seen for some reason this Tampa Bay team has a weakness with New Orleans, and they just lost to New Orleans. And the Footballers, and they just lost to them. Some people are convinced that the Tampa Bay team is going to lose to the New York Football Giants in primetime. I'm not exactly a believer of that, but we'll get into the pick'em portion later. But for some reason, just schematically, going up against Sean Payton, great coach, Ron Rivera, great coach, it seems they find a way to neutralize Tom Brady. It's a little intriguing. I wish someone with a little bit more football acumen, look, I'm... As much as I love to say, you know, on-air host here, Necessary Roughness Podcast, last word on sports, I'm not Bill Cowher, you know? I'm not Teddy Bruschi. I'm not Rex Ryan. Somebody's got to break this down, because there's got to be something that they're doing. It's not a mental thing. You can't get into the head, per se, of Tom Brady. You know, you pass rush him well enough, okay, sure, he starts getting the happy feet a little bit, but strategically... Obviously, the Footballers did not beat them last year in the playoffs, but they played them tough. Very tough. I'm just curious. So our next game was the return of Cam for the Carolina Panthers. I mean, he was only out there for about, like, 6 plays. But 3 of 4 passing with a touchdown on the little Peyton Manning rollout play. 3 carries for 14 yards with a touchdown and then screaming. And then screaming, I'm back, which I'm sure we'll be seeing in a lot of memes. It will be hilarious. It was hilarious. I laughed really hard. Taking the helmet off, getting the obvious showboating penalty. Whatever. It didn't matter. Colt McCoy did not have a very good game like he did the week before. Wind up seeing Chris Streveler on the field in this one a little bit. Can you really knock a team for losing with their backup quarterback? As much as I threw them in here because, oh, you know, they're opening the door. Like, come on. Backup QB. He goes 1-1. Big deal. The real team that deserves to be in here is the LA Rams. The LA Rams laid an egg for the 2nd consecutive week, and I'm a little concerned because now without Robert Woods, and it is worth noting, right? Robert Woods tears his ACL. We talked about how it could be such a great dynamic trio, trinamic trio, if you will, instead of dynamic duo. It could have been fantastic. And then as the words escaped my lips, Robert Woods tore his ACL at practice on that last Friday. We didn't see much out of OBJ in this one. We didn't see a lot of what Sean McVay has planned for him. They didn't run the ball much, granted, against a decent San Francisco defense. They couldn't stop the run very well. They couldn't stop the pass much better either. Jimmy G goes 15-19 for 180 in this one. A lot of it on that one Deebo Samuel touchdown. But Eli Mitchell runs for 90 yards on them. Debo runs for 36 on end arounds and you know, shenanigans. Jeff Wilson adds in another 28. Compare that to Darrell Henderson, who had 6 yards per carry, but he only got the ball 5 times. This is a team, the best Rams team we've seen under Sean McVay, relied on Todd Gurley. That's what they were. Run the ball, play action, run the ball, be deliberate, kind of try and take the decisions away from Jared Goff and make it obvious, right? So now you have all the shiny new toys, and sometimes you realize the shiny new toys aren't making you much better. We saw they bring in Von Miller before the game against the Titans. Hasn't done much. Obviously, it's only 2 games. Not saying Von's a bad player, bad acquisition. I get it. You know, they bring in Odell Beckham. Josh Reynolds also went on waivers. He winds up in Detroit. Obviously, they couldn't have claimed him. But you wonder, Josh was unhappy there. Did they call? Did they try and acquire their former wide? Is Josh Reynolds the same receiver as Odell Beckham? Not even close. Is his ceiling even close to where Odell is right now? That's a hard one, because I don't even know what you're going to get from Odell. Josh Reynolds is a contributor, and he's contributed for this Rams team before. And I saw in giving up Josh Reynolds in the offseason, in losing Gerald Everett, I saw a lot of guys that I considered, you know, Rams guys. Guys that are solid contributors. They're not heralded. And they come in and they just do the right thing. They get the ball. They score a touchdown every once in a while. They're helping you move the ball down the field. And that's something this year, obviously, the stardom of Cooper Kupp has kind of blossomed. But before this year, that's what I considered Cooper Kupp as well. He's obviously one of the more talented players on their offense, but he fits that kind of mold of, you know, there's not people beating down Cooper Kupp's door when he was a prospect coming into the NFL. They bring him in, they know his skill set very well, and they maximize that. It's Belichickian, you know what I mean? We know your skill set, we're going to maximize it, we're going to try and optimize you in our scheme and see how well that goes, see where that gets us, see where that gets you. When your trade value becomes more than what you think, you know, more than what we think you're worth, get out of here, you're gone, we'll get the next guy. But in bringing in the star players, it almost reminds me, and this one I know is a bad comp, I'll say it willingly, reminds me of when the New York Knicks traded for Carmelo Anthony. And you might say, Nick, that doesn't make any sense. Well, here's the thing. I know they didn't trade those players. They didn't trade Gerald Everett and Josh Reynolds for Odell Beckham. However, the way this team has changed with the acquisition of some of those guys, bringing in an Odell Beckham, right? And I like Tyler Higbee at tight end. I liked Higbee and Everett together. I still like Higbee on his own, but I think the production you got out of both of them was a little bit different. The reason I say it feels different with Odell there is because now you're going to have to cater things to Odell Beckham. That's the way it's always seemed, at least. You know, and he's never corrected that perception, so I tend to think it is true. Similar to how, I mean, the Knicks gave up the entire team for Carmelo Anthony, and then they began, you know, they became whatever Carmelo could take them to. Instead of a core of, you know, guys like Gallinari, guys like that, would those guys have won them a title? Probably not, but neither did Carmelo. So I'm a little weary of that, how this offense is going to change. It's also 2 weeks in a row, 2 teams that could punch you in the mouth, and LA just can't hang. They just can't hang. I'm a little worried. Look, remember, I was real high on the Rams in the offseason. I'm still high on them. You know, I was the driver of the bandwagon, especially when they beat the Bucks. Driving the bandwagon. And then they lose to the Cardinals. I was like, oh, that's no problem. I'm driving that bandwagon too. They crashed into each other. No big deal. We'll dust each other off. No, I'm a little worried now. And the Rams just so happen, after this bye week, to have the Packers in Green Bay. If they lose that game to Green Bay, I might be off the bandwagon. I just might. Because I have not liked what I've seen against these two teams. And look, the 49ers are not a great squad. I've ripped them over and over, as I've talked about teams being overrated. The Tennessee Titans, on the other hand, are a phenomenal squad. So you get an A-tier squad beat you up on your turf, then you drive down the highway, or up the highway, I'm not from California, you go to Santa Clara, and you get punked again, in primetime, by even more points. rough. And another thing that comes from this loss, got to consider, as we mentioned, Cardinals taking a loss this week opened the door. The door is open. If you win, you're tied with them and you have one game with them remaining. You could have walked into it. Nope. Missed your opportunity. And for that reason, we'll go 3-2-1 here. The biggest loss of the three has to go to the LA Rams. The second goes to Tampa Bay, dropping to 6-3, dropping into a situation where, oh, by the way, they are now, you know, just barely ahead of New Orleans in their division. And just barely ahead of Carolina. Number three, Cardinals. Some of the blow is lessened by the fact that those two other teams lost. But mostly because, backup quarterback, what do you want me to tell you? Number four in the standouts, Evan, we talked about Sunday Night Football. We talked about Monday Night Football, Sunday night being Kansas City, Monday night being San Francisco, LA. Let's talk Thursday Night Football. Let's talk about this New England Patriots team. We alluded to the fact before, this is one of the worst losses I've seen from the Falcons. Back-to-back, especially. I mean, just getting completely railed. Can we talk for a second, just as a cutaway here? I just had to mention this. Dallas Cowboys playing the Atlanta Falcons. Dallas is up by 31 points in the first half, tail end of the first half, and they go for two to make it a five-score game. What? Like, was this a rub-it-in-the-Falcons-face because of Dan Quinn works for us game? Like, I don't get that in the slightest. And it's not even like in the second half they rested Dak the whole half. Dak played a chunk of that second half as well. Speaking of Dak, an aside, I completely forget about Dak every time we do Comeback Player of the Year. He's probably going to win Comeback Player of the Year. But just, you know, for those of you that were screaming at your screen or adding me on social media, at Nick Donadic everywhere, NikDonadic, or in the comments wherever you're listening to this, if there is a comment section, because I know we're on plenty of platforms. Trust me, I know. Every time I forget Dak, and then I say, oh, I forgot Dak, and I just forget to bring it up. Mea culpa here. My bad. Back to the point at hand here. We're not going to talk about Atlanta being awful. We're going to talk about New England. Is New England a legitimate title contender in the AFC? Well, right now, they've played 11 games. Buffalo's only played 9. So right now, they're percentage points behind Buffalo. However, you take a look, and they still have both games with Buffalo remaining, coupled with the fact that they have games against Tennessee and Indy. They end the year with Jacksonville and Miami, but we're going to see a lot from them in these next 4 weeks. They've got a long layoff before their game at home against the Tennessee Titans, a Tennessee Titans team that's beat up with Julio Jones on IR and Derrick Henry on IR. So that's a winnable game. If you're going to be the guy, you got to beat the guy. And then they head up to Buffalo. And that's really going to determine the trajectory of their season. The other thing I wanted to bring up, because I've heard this kind of floated around, I've heard it floated around this Patriots team is maybe a second birth of the dynasty. And one of the things I was going to say is, first of all, full disclosure, I was born in 97, so I was a little kid when Tom Brady was starting his dynasty. But from what I remember and from what I've got from the statistics, right, the comp isn't that bad. Because the Patriots were really anchored by that defense back then. You take a look, Tom Brady's regular season stats in 01, the first Super Bowl season, when they won 20-17 in the Super Bowl. I mean, Brady goes 11-3 as a starter. Okay, Mac Jones is 7-4. 18 touchdowns to 12 picks, only 2,800 passing yards. Just not a lot on that offense back then. Take a look at the leading receivers. Troy Brown, quality. David Patton, remember the name. Terry Glenn, remember him more as a Cowboy, if I'm being honest with you. He was their third leading receiver with 200 receiving yards. So, you take a look the next season, Brady has a better year. They don't even make the playoffs that next season. So Brady goes 28 touchdowns, 14 picks this time. The third year, obviously they win the Super Bowl again, this time beating Carolina. Brady goes 23 touchdowns, 12 picks, 3,620 passing yards. Obviously, we're in a completely different league. It has opened up tremendously offensively. We're going to play an extra regular season game. Mac Jones already has 2,500 passing yards. He's got 70% completion percentage, which would trump all three of those Brady years significantly. 14 touchdowns to 8 picks. You do some projecting forward, he's going to crack 20 probably. Might wind up around 11, somewhere between 11 and 13 interceptions. If it, you know, if he doesn't have a stinker in there or a tremendous game in there. Point being, he doesn't have to be the guy on this team. You know, the post-original Dynasty Patriots, Brady was the dude, right? The defense was good, but Brady was that guy. He was the greatest of all time, and we'll have that discussion in a minute. And no, it's not me throwing dirt on his name this time. Before you type out your comment, delete your comment. Actually, don't. It helps the engagement. But either way, it's not me this time. So, the original Patriots dynasty, it was Belichick and the defense that really anchored everything. And, you know, that's why people have the argument, who deserves more credit, Brady or Belichick? Well, you take a look, they won 6 rings. 3 of them, Tom Brady was that dude. The other 3, the defense was kind of that dude. So, you know. And quite a few of them won by a field goal. And you say, first 3, Vinatieri was that dude. Hurdy-hur. It's not as funny when Tom Brady's got 65 Super Bowl rings, including a blowout in the last one. But I can definitely see the comparison between the early Patriots dynasty and this New England team. Do I think this New England team is that good? No. No, I don't. I don't think currently they're better than Buffalo. I would be intrigued to see how they would play against Baltimore. Right? Have they matched up this year? I feel like Baltimore plays New England every season. But no, they have not, and they will not until perhaps a postseason berth. So I tend to think that one could get weird. A full-strength Tennessee team could run over anybody. Are they going to be close to full strength come postseason time? And, you know, the wild card of, oh, by the way, the defending AFC champs who have a superstar quarterback, superstar receiver, superstar tight end, Hall of Fame head coach, and a defensive, you know, coordinator who thwarted Tom Brady in the Super Bowl. So might have to put him behind them, though. However, it is fair to say New England as a playoff contender, double thumbs up. I mean, it's 7-4. I can't deny it. Good on Mac Jones. Another interesting point I saw brought up, it was that Mac Jones, hands down the best quarterback taken in the draft this past year. Now, obviously, for a multitude of reasons, this is a dumb take. And the first one would be, it's the rookie year. Like, after the rookie year, Robert Griffin looked like a Hall of Famer. Now he's working at ESPN. Like, and it's not for the reason you'd think. I'll give you this. Trevor Lawrence has not been impressive. Zach Wilson has not been impressive. Trey Lance, I haven't seen enough of him. I have liked a chunk of what I've seen. Justin Fields, that primetime game against Pittsburgh showed a lot. That one touchdown run against San Francisco showed a lot to me. Mac Jones, his floor is higher than those other guys as a game-managing sort of quarterback, but I think his ceiling is also lower. I think if you told me everything broke the direction of Trevor Lawrence, you could make that argument that he's going to be that Andrew Luck type of guy that's, oh my goodness, he's the prototype, right? You could make the argument that Trey Lance develops into a, I wouldn't call it Cam Newton-like, but, you know, one of those mobile quarterbacks that is one of the best in the league for a handful of years. You could make the argument to me that Justin Fields is the quarterback the Bears have been looking for decades. So I'd say cool your jets on the Mac Jones hype train, though I would say Mac's having a good year. You know, rookie of the year consideration, I think this is almost the flip of last year. We saw Justin Herbert and Justin Jefferson. I was on the Herbert train. I think this year, with the Jamar Chase, Mac Jones, I'm flipping to the skill position guy. Jamar Chase might be one of the top 10 receivers in the NFL. Not even just rookies. In the NFL, as of, you know, handful of weeks ago before the Bengals hit a little bit of a speed bump. Justin Jefferson, he was probably a top 10 receiver in the league last year too, but Justin Herbert, just he had an all-time great rookie year for a QB. QB trumps wide out. I don't think Mac's putting up the stats that's going to beat Jamar Chase's stats come the end of the year. If you were to put up Mac against last year's Justin Jefferson, I would take Jefferson. Put it that way. That kind of takes us into number five for the standout seven. So, supposedly, and I don't have the exact quote, so I will go supposedly on this one. Cameron Jordan of the New Orleans Saints said Tom Brady is the most accomplished football player, but he is not athletic enough to be considered the GOAT. This is an interesting discussion, and I think it's kind of nuanced, because you could take it down that road of, so are you the greatest football player of all time? Are you the greatest NFL player of all time? I don't know the history of Canadian football. You know, I mean, would you put in Warren Moon because he played in multiple leagues? Are we talking some of the guys, is it the highest peak? Are we talking some of the performances we've seen from college players? I don't think we'd go there. I would agree that Tom Brady is likely the most accomplished NFL player ever. Perhaps the most accomplished football player ever. I wouldn't extend it into Canada because, like I said, I'm not 100% sure. But on top of that, as weird as it sounds, Cam Jordan might have a point. But we don't really have guys going two ways here. I mean, who are you going to say then? Deion Sanders? Because he had the talent and the hands and the speed to play receiver and DB. What are we doing here? You know, all I can say is Tom Brady has led, like I said, that early dynasty. Might have been more the defense, but he led game-winning drives in big games. Led his team to about 316 Super Bowls at this point. And that's good enough for me. Jerry Rice wants to have an argument. That's fair. Jerry can make a claim. You know, Deion Sanders wants to make a claim. Sure. By all means, Lawrence Taylor, one of the most intimidating defensive players of all time, sure. You can have a debate, but to say that he's not athletic enough to be in that debate, kind of unfair. Kind of unfair, in my opinion. It's like saying John Stockton can't be one of the best point guards ever because he didn't win a title, because John Stockton wasn't as dynamic a scoring threat. You know what I mean? Like, it's a little weird. We're a lot of apples to oranges today, perhaps because we're doing a late-night podcast, and I'm sorry about that. I'm sorry about the late timing, but between my work and everything, I'm just trying to make sure we get some content out to you guys, as I give a thumbs up to no one that could see it because we don't have a camera, but trying to make sure we get episodes out to you guys because I do love doing this show, and I don't want other commitments to necessarily completely interrupt the flow here, you know? Worked into the evening, so you know what? When we're done, it's podcast time. Let's do it. The other thing I wanted to discuss here about Tom Brady was an opinion Tom Brady gave. And no, it's not the quote he gave about Aaron Rodgers. I could care less. Couldn't care less, rather. Tom Brady, during his appearance on the Let's Go podcast, who? I don't know. Not the Necessary Roughness podcast, sadly, said that the NFL's 17-game schedule is pointless, the addition, that is, said the rule change was a terrible decision. He said, I think it's pointless. I thought it was a terrible decision, so I don't like the fact that we're playing 17 at all. I think 16 is plenty. You're 8 games into the year, and you're not halfway through, so that's kind of a little frustration aspect. Whatever, we'll play it. It's there. Okay, Tom. I mean, that's literally an argument you can make for any sport lengthening their season at all. Literally. I mean, if baseball were to go to 170 for some reason, you'd hear the same thing. If basketball were to go to 90, you'd hear the same thing. Do I agree with them? I'm kind of indifferent. I think it's interesting that Tom's been really outspoken against this rule and the jersey rule, the jersey number rule. They took away the classifications for positions. Is he getting curmudgeon-y? I don't know. The one with the numbers is kind of weird. I get it, but it'll take some getting used to, as all rule changes do. The 17-game thing, from the player's perspective, it's just a lot of, you know, I feel like it's probably pretty taxing on the body to play 16. Playing 17, I get it. He's 65 years old. You know, it gets to him. But I'm neither here nor there on it, honestly. Let me know what you guys think. You know, same methods as mentioned before. Comments or on social media. All social media. Yeah. Doesn't really bother me. I just thought it was interesting that he spoke out on it. Number six in the standout seven. Another note from a post from another podcast, Pick Six Pod on Instagram. Quality follow. Shout out to those guys. Will Brinson, quote from Twitter, NFC West coaches Sean McVay, Kyle Shanahan, and Cliff Kingsbury get away with a ton of terrible in-game coaching decisions because they're young, cool, good-looking, and have fun offenses. And in 25 years, all three will be Pete Carroll. If that means that they'll be very accomplished and Super Bowl champions, then I'm sure all three of them would take that, if I'm being completely honest with you. Pete Carroll has quite the lengthy resume dating back to USC. However you view the scandals with recruiting and weird stuff with Reggie Bush having to give back his Heisman. But they accomplished a lot there, and he accomplished a lot in Seattle, not running it at the, you know, at the goal line, whatever, costing him a title. Coaches make bad decisions all the time that cost them titles. It happens. The other interesting thing I would say is he's completely right. Do I agree with the Pete Carroll thing? Not necessarily. But I think he's completely right that some coaches get away with just weird decisions, you know, because, you know, that's just the way Mike McCarthy does it. Like I just talked about earlier, going up 33 points at home on an Atlanta Falcons team that looks atrocious, is that really something that needed to be done? You needed to go up by 33 instead of 32? Who cares? It is not going to have the impact you think it does. They're not in this game in the slightest. I'm a little confused at that one. There's plenty of other decisions. Going for it on fourth down as many times as some of these other coaches do. I like the aggressiveness, but you really need to pick your spots. We talked about it with Coach Harbaugh in Baltimore. He's made some weird decisions that no one calls him on because Super Bowl champion. That's just the way it is, Will. When you have jewelry to flaunt around, people are not gonna question you. Because at the end of the day, if you come back and snap back at them, well, I'm a Super Bowl champion. Yeah, I don't have a counter argument to that. That is true. That is, in fact, true. Side note, of those three coaches, let's say, this is an open question to the crowd here. You have to hire one of these three coaches to herald your team to a title within the next 5 years, right? Whatever, building from the ground up, we don't even need to pick a roster. Because, I mean, if we say, like, Detroit, I mean, you could hire John Madden and it might not happen. So let's say you're an upstart team, you know, one of these coaches. I'm going, this is tough, because, see, I have Shanahan in the middle here, but Shanahan's the only one that's actually led a team. No, McVay led him to the Super Bowl, I'm lying. But Shanahan was winning, though. Like, McVay's team looked awful. Kingsbury hasn't had enough time, so he's got to be number three, even though I like his offense a lot. You know, I think they're pretty creative over there. You know I like McVay. I'm biased. I'm going McVay number one, Shanahan two. But in terms of accomplishments right now, you know, come on. Shanahan was a blown deep pass from Jimmy G away from being a Super Bowl champion. And I don't give them enough credit for that, and I'm sure there's plenty of other people that don't either. That takes us to number seven. The last point on the standout seven, just some news and notes to wrap up. Jared Goff did not practice. I believe this news was about a day ago. For the third consecutive day, Tim Boyle is going to start, presumably. Once again, we do not have injury reports since we're doing a show on a Friday. So, we're going to operate under the assumption it's going to be our boy Timmy Boyle under center against... Actually, we do have injury reports. I lied. Since we're doing the show later in the day, we do actually have injury reports. That's great news. Jared Goff listed as doubtful with an oblique. So, we're going to go Timmy Boyle. We're going to operate under the assumption he's going to go. Other news throughout the league. There's a budding slight controversy about Antonio Brown potentially having a fake vaccine card. We don't usually talk about weird stuff like that on the show, but I felt the need to mention it to you because it sounded bizarre. John Gruden suing the NFL. Once again, don't really go there, but sure. We mentioned Julio Jones going to be out at least two more weeks on IR. Robert Woods done for the year with an ACL. Le'Veon Bell cut, released, relieved of his duties by the Baltimore Ravens. Joe Flacco is going to start for the Jets. We didn't even talk Buffalo. Mike White kind of hit a wall. A little weird they'd go Flacco, but apparently Joe Flacco to start for the Jets this week. We'll get into that in a bit. Ryan Fitzmagic is done for the season with the, I believe, hip injury he sustained before. It's quite possible we never see Ryan Fitzpatrick wear an NFL uniform again. And if that is the case, one, I will be quite sad. But two, he had one of the most bizarre and yet so enjoyable NFL careers for someone that's, look, I'm sure it was frustrating for someone rooting for the teams that he was quarterbacking, but for someone rooting from the outside and just as a general football fan, Ryan Fitzpatrick was good for the game. It was very enjoyable, especially coming out of Harvard. You never expect a guy out of Harvard to be a starting quarterback in the NFL. Bizarre, but fantastic. That might be the way to describe his career. I'd watch Ryan Fitzpatrick like a documentary on his life. Or a movie. Make a movie out of it. Why not? Cast Zach Galifianakis as Ryan Fitzpatrick, just for the beard. Don't make him look athletic at all. It sounds tremendous. Joey Bosa gonna miss this week's game, or likely too, because he was on the COVID list for the Chargers. Richard Sherman is gonna miss a few weeks. Kyler Murray is close to returning from his ankle injury. Nick Chubb is off the COVID list. He will be back for the Cleveland Browns. Khalil Mack, pass rusher for the Chicago Bears, is done for the season. Not like they're going anywhere, but it's a shame to see a star player go down. And he's been battling through that for a while, I believe, this year. And Cam Newton is going to start for the Carolina Panthers this week. All right, folks. That brings us to my favorite part of the show, your favorite part of the show, the pick'em portion of this week's episode. And let me get here real quick. Let me preface this by saying, what has been going on? We started the year so well. You take a look at some of the records we had to start the year, right? 7-9 in week one, okay, whatever. And then you see 12-4, 11-5, 11-5, 11-5, 11-3, 9-4. You get to week eight, and all of a sudden 6-9, all right, then we get back to 8-6. And then last week we go 6-7-1 because Big Ben winds up not playing in the game against the Detroit Lions at home. By the way, if you bet the way I told you, you know, obviously Detroit covered, but it was such an easy read. I'm in New York. I can't bet, but man, that was an easy read. We're trying to get back on track is my point. We won the Thursday game. And the other thing to consider, we got the third. No, do we? I think we might have missed last week's Thursday. Yeah. That was the Dolphins upset. That's why we're 6-7-1. We've been great, killing it on Thursday night football. All of a sudden the Ravens lay an egg and we're under 500. So let's get back at it, and let's take it right where we were just talking about. The Baltimore Ravens head to Chicago to take on the Bears. The Bears, obviously, going to be without Khalil Mack, as we said. Also going to be without D-tackle Akeem Hicks with an ankle injury. Doubtful, huge one. Wide receiver Allen Robinson with a hammy. Questionable, safety Eddie Jackson, also with a hammy. The Ravens, on the other side, the team that just let us down, they're going to be without wide receiver Miles Boykin with a finger, D-tackle Brandon Williams with a shoulder, and linebacker Pernell McPhee with a knee. Laundry list of players on the questionable side of their docket. Latavius Murray, Marquise Hollywood-Brown, Devin Duvernay, Nick Boyle, Cedric Abui, Patrick McCary, both on the O-line. And on the defensive side, Christian Welch, Jimmy Smith, Tavon Young, and Anthony Everett. Three corners, the last three players there, all in the secondary. It does not matter in the slightest. In our first 1 p.m. kick, we are obviously taking the Baltimore Ravens. to take down Justin Fields at Soldier Field. Next, we've got an NFC North showdown as the Green Bay Packers head to Minnesota to take on the Vikings off of a big win. Honestly, that was a big win for them to move to 4-5. Packers going to be without Aaron Jones with a knee injury, Malik Taylor at the wide receiver position with an abdomen, and David Bakhtiari, former Pro Bowler on the O-line, going to miss this one with a knee. Also doubtful, wide receiver Alan Lazard with a shoulder, and two on the defensive side questionable, pass rusher Rashawn Gary, with an elbow, and Kiki Kingsley on the D-line with a concussion. The Vikings, just two players, Wyatt Davis listed as out with an ankle, and Bashaud Breeland is questionable in the secondary with a groin injury. Now, the smart money says to take the Packers in this one, and coming off of a rough week, we got to take all the smart money we can. Give me Green Bay to win this one, and I would say push Minnesota back out of contention, but this NFC wild card hunt is so sloppy. Even after a loss, Minnesota's still honestly right in the thick of it. Give me Rodgers to win on the road. Next, the Frank Reich Bowl, I guess? Sure. The Indianapolis Colts head to Buffalo, coached by Frank Reich, obviously, to take on the Buffalo Bills. The Colts, one listed on their injury report, Darius Leonard, it's a big one. He's listed as questionable with an ankle. The Bills listing Tremaine Edmonds in their linebacking core as questionable with a hammy as well. This is a big matchup. Buffalo really bounced back. We alluded to it, but we didn't really discuss it. They beat the bricks off of the New York Jets, as they should. They've got three losses this year, right? They've got a tough luck, special teams involved loss to the Pittsburgh Steelers in week one. Then they go on a massacring rampage where they beat the Dolphins by 35. They beat Washington by 22, Texans by 40, Chiefs by 18. Then they lose a really close one late because they didn't want to kick a field goal to Tennessee by 3. Go back to winning by 2 scores against Miami. Lose to the Jaguars in a complete head-scratcher, and then they blow out the Jets. This Bills team is fantastic. At the beginning of the year, I said I was expecting a little bit of a regression. I don't really think I've seen that as much as I thought I would. I also don't think I've seen as much as I thought I would from the Colts. So, if 1 plus 1 equals 2, then it's 2. Give me Buffalo to win this one at home. Next, a battle of the only two teams to ever go winless. The Detroit Lions, led by everyone's favorite fantasy team quarterback, Tim Boyle, head to Cleveland to take on a little bit of a beat-up and battered Baker Mayfield and the Cleveland Browns. The Lions going to be without running back Jamar Jefferson with a knee and an ankle. Going to be without lineman Matt Nelson with an ankle and linebacker Trey Flowers with a knee. Also questionable, two more skill position players, Jamal Williams at running back with a thigh, and Trinity Benson with a knee. The Browns, going to be without Anthony Schwartz, a wide receiver with a concussion, and two corners, A.J. Green with a concussion, not that A.J. Green, and Troy Hill with a neck. Questionable, however, Donovan Peoples-Jones, wide receiver with a groin. DPJ greater than OBJ, saw that a little bit floating around on social media from Browns fans. Well, you might not have either on the field this week. I'll say this. If Jared Goff was playing, I would probably bait myself into taking the Lions. I still considered taking the Lions because I'm insane. This feels like a game where you bet the under and you just take the W. However, that's not what we do here. So I'm going to take Cleveland to win this one at home because someone has to. Next, Cam Newton faces off against his old head coach as Ron Rivera takes the WFT down to Carolina to take on the Panthers. The WFT going to be without tight end Ricky Seals-Jones with a hip injury and DN Shaka Tony, who's in the concussion protocol. Questionable for them, some names you might have heard before. Wide receiver Curtis Samuel. This would be a revenge game if he were to play. Former Panther, he's questionable with a groin. Sadiq Charles on the O-line. And two corners, Benjamin Saint-Just, was trying to really add the flair to it. He's in the concussion protocol as well, and Kendall Fuller with a knee. Panthers listing just one, Corner Stanley Thomas Oliver with a toe injury. Obviously, Sam Darnold battling through the scapula injury. Not going to be out there. It's going to be Cam. I think the footballers are a decent team. And considering the NFC is in complete disarray, if they were somehow able to win this game, they'd be right back in it. You can make the argument the same way for Carolina. Carolina's coming in at 5-5. So if they win this game, which is very possible and some would argue likely, they would jump right to the top of that heap for the wild card contention as well. I'm actually going to buck the trend here and take the visiting team. I'm going to take Taylor Heinicke to carry over some of that beating Tampa Bay momentum and win this one in Charlotte. Next, the Houston Texans head to Tennessee to take on the Titans in an AFC South matchup. I mean, I'll read you the injury report, but I don't think it matters. Deshaun Watson's a no-go for the Texans, for obvious reasons. Also missing this one, linebacker Hardy Nickerson with a concussion. Questionable, two on the defensive side as well. Corner Craven LeBlanc and DN Jonathan Greenard with a foot. Out for the Titans in this one, running back Jeremy McNichols, tight end Jeff Swaim, offensive lineman Nate Davis, two linebackers, Rashawn Evans and Bud Dupree, three, and David Long, as well as corner Greg Maben. I mean, you got to take the Titans, right? This feels like a game, especially after the Tennessee Titans have lost Derrick Henry, their best running back, and Julio Jones, that they could be on upset alert. I thought they were on upset alert against Tennessee, if I'm being honest with you, and that game got a little bit closer than you'd like if you're a Titan fan. That being said, sometimes you got to take the smart money. We're coming off a bad week, and I'm going to keep the spiciness out of this one. Give me Tennessee to win this one at home. Next, the aforementioned, underrated or overrated, depending on how you look at it, 49ers head to Jacksonville to take on Urban Meyer and the Jaguars. The 49ers going to be without running back Jamichael Hasty with an ankle and D-tackle Maurice Hurst with a calf. Also doubtful, running back Elijah Mitchell, who we just talked about, with a finger injury. Jaguars, similar injuries here, as their running back James Robinson is questionable with a heel and a knee, and linebacker Dakota Allen going to miss this one with a shoulder injury. Now, I can't really explain it to you. Maybe it is the intuition of having done this for 5 years now. I believe it's five. It might be six. No, it's definitely five. But for some reason, I do think that the Jacksonville Jaguars have a chance in this game. I will keep it the same way I've kept the other ones. Play the smart money. We're off of a rough week. Give me the 49ers, right? They have the momentum. Momentum's a real thing. But I do think the Jaguars can find a way to make this interesting. Next, an AFC East matchup that maybe 35 people will be tuning into as the Miami Dolphins head to New Jersey to take on the Jets. The Dolphins listing two is questionable. D-tackle Christian Wilkins with a quad and linebacker Andrew Van Ginkle, the Gink Man, with a back. The Jets listing Zach Wilson as doubtful with a knee. We talked about before, Joe Flacco's going to start in this one, so it's a little bit irrelevant if we're being honest. Questionable, one on the O-line, one on the D-line. Elijah Vera Tucker, their rookie O-lineman, with a toe, and D-tackle Nathan Shepard with a knee. I think we take the Dolphins in this one. If Mike White were starting, I would take the Jets, partially because I like the chaos of Mike White having more touchdowns through like three games than Zach Wilson has through the whole year. He already kind of does. I think Zach Wilson has about four touchdowns. I don't think Joe Flacco is going to beat a team that Lamar Jackson couldn't. So maybe that's simple Ravens math for me. Maybe the transitive property doesn't always fly, but give me Miami to win this one on the road. Our last 1 o'clock kick is a bit of an intriguing one, as the 5-4 New Orleans Saints head up to Philly to take on the 4-6 Eagles. The Saints are going to be without Alvin Kamara, without Ty Montgomery, without O-lineman Ryan Ramczyk and Teron Armstead, and without D-linemen Tano Passanio and Malcolm Roach. Also, Taysom Hill is questionable with a foot injury. the Eagles without O-lineman Jack Anderson with a hammy, and on the defensive side, two players are questionable, DN Derek Barnett with a neck, and linebacker Davion Taylor with a knee. I do not think that the Eagles are very good. I think the Saints are better than the Eagles. But without Mike Thomas, obviously, Michael Thomas, excuse me, and without Alvin Kamara, and without Jameis Winston, I'm kind of forced into picking Philly. I don't think this Philly team is very good, but I guess you can hang your hat on. I mean, they've kept up with some decent teams. They have a couple of wins, so you know what? What's one more? Give me the Philadelphia Eagles to win this one at home in our last 1 o'clock game. Next, our lone 405 kick is a battle between two teams that, as of a few weeks ago, were kind of running their way through the power rankings here, as the Cincinnati Bengals head to Vegas to take on the Raiders. The Bengals, 2 on the injury report. Auden Tate listed as questionable with a thigh injury, and D-tackle Tyler Shelvin with a knee. The Raiders going to be without their fullback Alec Ingold, and without 2 on the defensive side, linebacker Nick Kwiatkowski and corner Kelshawn Nixon. Sorry, I had a little bit of a moment there. Couldn't tell if that was an L or an I. And you know how it is. The late night podcast, that's the way it is. This one's going to be a fun one. Underrated game of the week, perhaps. We've got some decent matchups. We've got, you know, the primetime games. And we've got, obviously, the other games in this 425 window are a little bit spicier. But I think this is an underrated matchup of the week. And I've got Joe Burrow and the Bengals kind of riding the ship. I'm not going to lie. I've been in and then out on this bandwagon over and over again. Last time we saw them, they got scorched at home by the Cleveland Browns. Last time we saw the Raiders, they got scorched at home by the Kansas City Chiefs. If an unstoppable force meets an immovable object, what happens? Well, when two teams are coming off of kind of demoralizing division losses, what's going to happen? Well, one team's coach had an extra week to coach them up. Give me the Bengals to win this one on the road. Next in the 425 window, we've got what is likely, you know, what's the tagline Fox uses? America's game of the week. As the Dallas Cowboys head to Kansas City to take on the Chiefs. Cowboys, 3 listed as questionable. Tyron Smith on the O-line with an ankle. Kelvin Joseph with a personal matter. And, excuse me, he's at corner. And another corner, Nashawn Wright with a hammy. The Chiefs going to be without offensive lineman Lucas Niang with a rib injury. 2 in their defensive secondary are also questionable. Corner Legarius Sneed with a knee. And safety Armani Watts. This is a huge game. And the conventional wisdom would take Dallas. They just smacked around the Falcons. They've had a more impressive season, if we're being honest. However, and perhaps this is unfair, the track record of the Dallas Cowboys is that they are prone to losing a big game. And you can make the argument, and I'm not saying they need a statement game. They're going to win the NFC East running away. They're one of the best teams in the NFC. You smack around Kansas City in Kansas City, you get everyone's attention. No matter if they're 6-4 or 9-1, this would be a huge win for the Cowboys. And for that very reason, I have a feeling Andy Reid, first of all, Andy Reid knows how to beat Dallas better than anybody. Granted, he was a little bit more dedicated to it when he was in Philly, but come on now. But let's be real. The Chiefs have worked their way, they were digging their own grave, and then found a way to work their way out of it. I don't think Andy Reid wants them to find a way to fall back in. I think the Chiefs win this one at home. Our other 425 game is an NFC West showdown, which I hope is between 2 undersized mobile quarterbacks. I'm hoping Kyler Murray comes back to lead the Cardinals to Seattle to take on the Seahawks. Seahawks coming off of a bad showing. To be polite, a bad showing against the Green Bay Packers, where they were shut out for the first time in Russell Wilson's career. DeAndre Hopkins not going to go in this one. On the O-line, Justin Pugh, former Giant, going to miss this one with a calf injury. And on the defensive side, Tanner Vallejo, going to miss this one with a knee. Buda Baker in the defensive backfield, as well as James Wiggins, also at safety, questionable for this one as well. Seahawks listing a couple players as questionable, none listed as out. Jamal Adams in the defensive backfield with a groin. DJ Reed at corner with a groin and a knee. Kerry Hyder on the D-line with a calf. Cody Barton with a quad. And one on the offensive side, offensive tackle, Jamarco Jones with a back. If Kyler Murray plays, which is a big if Kyler Murray plays, I think the Cardinals will win this game. There are two wild cards here. One being, will Kyler go? And the other being the pride of Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll. Because not only do they not get punked, they don't lose a lot of big games like that, I feel like, in the entirety of Russell's tenure as the starting quarterback. Have they been eliminated from playoff games? Yes. Have they lost big games? Have they lost in-division games? Of course. But I mean, they were thoroughly beaten down in their last game. And it's not like they were blown out by the Packers per se. You know, it wasn't 42-20. I mean, they were impotent on offense. 20 of 40 from Russell Wilson, that's awful. 20 of 40 for a 161 and two touchdowns. That was horrible. Which lead me to believe that they're going to come out and they're going to be coming out firing in this one. Which is why I'm going to be that guy. I'm going to throw my asterisk on it. I'm going to say if Kyler plays, the Cardinals win in a hard-fought one. If Kyler does not play, I'm taking Seattle to turn it around. I can't see that happening back-to-back weeks. Our next game is the Sunday night football matchup between the Pittsburgh Steelers and the LA Chargers from Los Angeles. Pittsburgh going to be without TJ Watt in this one. Huge injury. They're also going to be without Joe Hayden at corner and Kevin Dotson on the O-line. Hayden with a foot, Watt with a knee, and Dotson with an ankle. Excuse me, Watt with a hip and a knee. The Chargers, couple of big names you've heard of on the injury report. Doubtful, D-lineman, run stuffer, Linval Joseph. Two in the defensive secondary. Mark Webb Jr. at corner with a knee and Alohi Gilman with a quad. Also questionable, DB Trey Marshall with an ankle, and running back Justin Jackson with a quad. I just realized I said big names when it was Linval Joseph and Justin Jackson. Maybe my bar for big names is a little too low. Much bigger names on the Steelers injury report. Might have mixed those up. This is a big game for both teams. Pittsburgh coming in at 5-3-1, still kind of in position to contend in their division, granted in a down year. I am operating under the assumption Big Ben Roethlisberger will play in this game. That's my asterisk. My hands are up right now. This LA team, if they are going to make the playoffs, or, you know, if they are going to realistically contend in this division, this is a week where, look, we lost ground. We blew our chance. No. The Chiefs could easily lose at home. If the Chiefs lose at home and you win at home, booyah, you're right back in it. I'm going to take Justin Herbert to win this one, partially because without TJ Watt and Joe Hayden, two of the bigger names on the Steelers defense, I'm not 100% on the fact that this defense is going to be able to continue to play as well as they usually do. On top of the fact that coming off of COVID, I'm not 100% sure if Ben's going to go. And I'm not going to be 100% sure what we're going to see from Ben, period. That's kind of what it is every week now at this point, sadly. That brings us to our Monday night matchup. No injury report for this one, obviously. A little bit too far away. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers play host to the New York Football Giants. No, this is not Eli Manning coming down to take on Tom Brady. It is Eli Manning's team taking on Tom Brady. I don't know. It's a weird one. I'm not taking the Giants on the road. I alluded to this earlier. Some people are saying the Giants could win this game. It's possible. I wouldn't doubt it. Will we see Barkley again? I don't know. Are we going to see Daniel Jones turn the ball over at least once? Yeah, probably twice. Are we going to see Tom Brady throw two interceptions again? Shake the Magic 8 Ball? Not likely. even without Antonio Brown, if he doesn't go, even without Gronk, if he doesn't go, how are the Giants going to defend Godwin and Evans? The Giants have some playmakers in their secondary, but that doesn't ever really seem to matter. Give me Tampa Bay to win this one at home. I'm not going to turn this into a personnel breakdown where we go matchup by matchup when the New York Giants are involved. They're the worst team. Tampa Bay's the defending champs. Give me Tampa Bay at home. And next, you thought you might be getting off scot-free here. No, 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 no. We've still got three games to break down on Thanksgiving Day. Hope you all are excited for Thanksgiving. Hope you have plans with your family, whether it's sitting around and watching football or sitting around and, you know, being a family and hanging out and chatting and catching up and eating turkey or ham or whatever your family likes to eat. Our first game, as is guaranteed every year, we have the Detroit Lions playing host to the Chicago Bears. Detroit, obviously, you're going to see them every Thanksgiving. Unfortunately, this year, you're going to see one of the worst Detroit teams you've seen in about a decade. Shout out to Dan Orlovsky. I keep seeing him popping up everywhere. I mean, like, I'm not trying to be mean. He obviously has got way more of a pedigree than me, but, like, dude, you were on one of the worst football teams ever. Like, dude, what? Anyway, Chicago Bears headed to Detroit to take on the Lions. No idea if Goff is going to be ready to go in this one. I guess we'll take the Bears. Part of me, once again, wants to be a madman and take the Lions, but I can't do it if I don't know the starting QB is going to be there. I like Justin Fields. He's kind of won me over, I'm not going to lie, after a handful of games. Give me Justin Fields to win on the national stage. And that's another thing that's really important here. This is a chance for him to kind of show out on the national stage like he did against Pittsburgh. That's in 12:30. Next game at 4:30, the Las Vegas Raiders head to Dallas to take on the Cowboys. At this point, I mean, coming off of the loss to Kansas City, I have them losing to Cincinnati. I have them losing this game to the Cowboys as well and kind of free-falling in one of the most bizarre seasons I've ever seen for a football team, when your head coach winds up resigning but then saying he was forced to resign, which I don't doubt if I'm being completely honest. We won't go into that. But then he's suing the league, and you have your young potential, you know, star potential wide receiver wind up involved in a vehicular manslaughter, and he's going to jail. What is going on? Give me the Cowboys to win at home on Turkey Day. Our last matchup of the day sounded spicier a few weeks ago, but that's life. The Buffalo Bills head down to Nolens to take on the New Orleans Saints at 8:20 p.m. There's no shot I'm taking Trevor Siemian to win this one. This could be one of those big-time games where if Josh Allen has a big game in primetime on Thanksgiving, granted against a New Orleans team that's pretty good, but they're not a title contender, it could put his MVP case up over the top. Now, am I saying that he's going to be a runaway MVP? Not at all. Am I saying he's even my favorite for MVP? Not necessarily. What I am saying is this would certainly help, especially in prime time. I know we're in the digital age, 2021, and you could watch any game at any time. You could put it on Red Zone. I love Red Zone as much as the next guy. See highlights from every player anytime. You could watch it on demand after the fact. Break down the film. I get it. But there's something to be said for playing well in prime time when you know everyone's watching. It happens all the time. And I think it might happen in this game for Josh Allen, and that's why I'm taking the Buffalo Bills. So that'll bring us to the end of every year's longest edition of the Pick'em portion, as we have three Thursday night games. And that pushes us towards the end of this week's episode, episode number 121, of the Necessary Roughness podcast, presented by Last Word on Sports. A little bit of a glimpse behind the curtain. We might be having another late night episode next Friday. It'll either be significantly earlier in the day. It might be late night. It might be, who knows, it might be late night on Thanksgiving. That could be a little spicy, but that would still technically be Friday. I would say this is still technically a Friday episode, you know, even though it's coming out probably closer to post-midnight. I apologize for that, but it is what it is. Still getting it to you guys pre all the football games, breaking down everything that's happened, breaking down the primetime games, breaking down last Sunday's matchups, and taking a look forward. And that's what we do here. That's what we pride ourselves on. That's what we hope that you enjoy. And if you're still here, first episode or 100th episode, I like to think that you do. So join us next Friday for episode number 122. I'm your host, Nicholas Donatic, signing off.